Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy Martin Luther King Day. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives, and two of them deal with Sunday night's excruciating Democratic presidential debate held in South Carolina. And actually, the good martini comes out of that unintentionally for Hillary Clinton, as it turns out. But Ian, it was pretty clear early on what Hillary Clinton's intention was. She's been slipping in the polls in Iowa. She's been slipping in the polls in New Hampshire. South Carolina comes after that. So she needs to do well there. And she knows that Barack Obama did very well against her there in 2008. So in addition to the fact that the debate was co-sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus Institute, she made every possible effort to tie herself to what she sees as the greatest accomplishments of the Obama administration, including Obamacare.
The Affordable Care Act. That is one of the greatest accomplishments of President Obama, of the Democratic Party, and of our country. And we have already seen 19 million Americans get insurance.
Why stop at one of the greatest accomplishments of the country, Ian? Maybe it's one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the whole history of the entire world. And she wrapped herself in the Iran deal, even not following through on the red line in Syria. This is an opposition research dream for the GOP.
Absolutely. No, Obamacare is soon going to be, you know, the eighth wonder of the world. It's astonishing, but it makes a certain amount of political sense, and you laid it out exactly right. Bernie's advancing on her in both of the first two states, and so she's repositioning herself on the basis of the current president, whose personal favorability is still very high. Now, there's an obvious problem here. She's not Barack Obama. She wants to pursue the same strategy electorally of exciting minorities, young people, and people who've generally been politically disengaged, which was not very difficult for the first serious black presidential candidate to do. That, you know, the Hillary is not going to have that same appeal. It's just not going to work. And so now she's in this weird position where she's said in the past that she's going to be a break and her own woman, and it's going to be her own administration. And now she's trying to say that she's going to basically be the third term of Obama, or the third, you know, sort of the fifth term, if you will, of the most recent Democratic presidents, and she's relying on her personal charm to do this, and that's not going to go over well.
On to the president himself this weekend. He went to gloat before the TV cameras over the weekend about a couple of things. Number one, the official implementation of the Iran nuclear deal, because shockingly, Ian, Iran has complied officially with all of the requirements, and the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors gave them the green light. So that means the sanctions are off, billions upon billions of dollars flowing back into Iran of their own frozen assets. We're somehow giving them about $1.7 billion in debt and other fees. And the other big story, of course, over the weekend, which the first part is fantastic news. We're thrilled for the families of the American hostages who were freed, and they are finally going to be reunited soon. Amir Hakmati, the Marine, you've got Pastor Abedini, and you've got Jason Rezaian of the Washington Post. Some of those names we've been talking about many, many times over the years. We're thrilled that they got out. Obviously, there was a lot given up in return, which once again gives Iran and others the message that if you take hostages and do bad things, the United States will in some ways reward that. But at least it seemed like a better deal on the hostage front than the Bergdahl deal, but not exactly the highest bar to clear.
No, definitely not. It's absolutely terrific that these men are home. NR has editorialized about this and a million other, you know, publications. I've written about Saeed Abedini. You know, what some of these people went through is just horrifying. Being stuck in an Iranian prison for any period of time is enough to make you certainly long for the home of the free and the brave. But the way that this went down is ugly. It's disappointing. And it reinforces exactly what you said, Greg, that now folks in the Middle East, or regimes in the Middle East, know that the United States is going to be willing to play ball. This is exactly why the administration discourages negotiating with terrorists who take hostages. because then you get a situation like Al-Qaeda or insurgents in Iraq or whomever start kidnapping contractors and this sort of thing. I mean, it's rather obvious. More than that, though, this prisoner exchange was something should have been a starting condition in dealing with Iran. It should have been a sine qua non from the get-go. Instead, what you had is the Obama administration making concession after concession after concession simply to get Iran to the table, then ignoring all of the Iranian abuses that have taken place, you know, death to America, just intended for a domestic audience and the rest, and now further concessions to get these prisoners home, and the release was timed so that it would cover up the release of the frozen assets. I mean, it's great that these folks are home, but they became political pawns in a continuing deal of just devastatingly bad judgment by the Obama administration. It's hard to be disappointed in a certain respect, but this is exactly what we've seen from the Obama administration for, you know, going on multiple years now, and the Iranians come out again on top.
Seems to be a pattern. It's hard to think of anywhere they've really given up any ground, much less lost the balance of the negotiations, if you could even call them that, from Vienna and beyond. Yeah, John Kerry just as proud as punch after everything that's been done over the past couple of years here. Back to the Democratic presidential debate for our crazy martini, and it's simply this fact. Bernie Sanders, despite his best efforts to not go after Hillary Clinton's most vulnerable points, actually has a chance of winning this thing. He's ahead in Iowa. He's ahead in New Hampshire. He's doing much better in national polls, state-by-state polls after New Hampshire, a little bit dicey for him. But if he can win those two, obviously those numbers are likely to change to some extent. So even though he starts almost every answer with, I agree with Secretary Clinton. And my favorite part, though, is when he gets after the crescendo of something Hillary said or the audience applauses, and then he says, but here's the big thing. You're like, okay, he's really going to nail her. And then he just goes and talks about special interests in Wall Street again. So despite the fact that his tactics are terrible, he never goes after her weakest points. It just shows you how terrible of a candidate Hillary Clinton is that Bernie Sanders, this guy who should have been a gadfly and an afterthought, actually has a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were talking about this earlier in the cycle, and it's sort of worth bringing back up now. But the fracture that you're seeing on the right, which is significant, is mirrored on the left in this form. That there's a populist movement going on the left. I don't know what you want to call Donald Trump, but certainly on the left, what you have is an avowed socialist who is actually exciting people, exciting exactly the types of people that Hillary Clinton wants to excite, which are the young people. Millennials poll extremely high for Bernie, much higher than they do for Hillary, despite her best efforts. And people who've been sort of politically disengaged, or whose only engagement might have been, you know, occupying Zuccotti Park. It's kind of extraordinary, and it shows you that the political fracture lines are not just on the right. You know, are always hearing about a Republican civil war. There's actually a significant amount of civil violence going on the left too. Now, whether Bernie can turn that into electoral victory is obviously going to be the question. But if you're Hillary Clinton, this isn't 2008. This is easily the weakest Democratic field in generations, and you're neck and neck with Larry David's character from Curb Your Enthusiasm. I mean, this is not where you wanted to be 2 weeks before voters go to the polls in Iowa.
She's just a terrible candidate. I mean, there's nothing compelling about it.
Absolutely awful.
There were no good one-liners. There was nothing off the standard talking points. The only entertaining thing was, of course, that moderators wanted to give most of the attention to Hillary and Bernie Sanders. So you had Martin O'Malley, who's at 1 or 2 or whatever percent, constantly trying to interject. Can I get 30 seconds? Can I get 30 seconds? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. My favorite part was when Lester Holt asked everybody, what are the first three things you do if you get elected president? And he was the third one they got to. He only got through his first 2 points, and Lester Holt tried to move on. And O'Malley said, well, I actually have a third one too.
We're at that point where you want to go and give Martin O'Malley a hug, you know, whether you like him, whether you don't, you know, just come here, guy, you know, and it's tough up there for you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that was, yeah, at least there was that awkward entertainment going on throughout the night. But Ian, as always, good to have you with us. We'll talk to you later in the week.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.